I'd like to call the meeting in the Senate Community and Regional Affairs to order. For the record, it is 3:36 p.m. on Monday, April 30th, 2018. We're in the Belch Room of the Tom Stewart Building. We do have a quorum to do business. Senator Hoffman, Senator Gardner, Senator Stedman, myself, Senator Bishop, Senator McKinnon is on other state business and should be joining us here shortly. I'd like to apologize to Ann Krekelberg and Ben Manley and others. Last week, our schedules and my colleagues, our schedules were fluid as our last meeting was on April 25th, and we should have had this done on April 27th. But we're here now. We're going to talk about Rep. Wool's bill, HB 374. Is Aide Rob Earl here is to answer questions. Gene Terrio is also in the room. And from the Department of Law, we have Stuart Goring online in case we need him. Emma Hoken is maybe in the room, maybe not. And Gene Terrio was asked, Rob, if you want to come put yourself on the record, Gene, if you'd just come on up too and sit here, get up here at the table. And Rob, just give us a brief highlight on the bill, because we're about ready to send it on its merry way if it's the will of the committee.
For the record, Rob Earl, staff representative Wool. HB 374 just creates allows utilities to create a voluntary on-bill financing program that would allow a utility customer to borrow money for an energy improvement and then repay it through a separate line item on the utility bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. And Mr. Terrio, you have been asked a specific question by Senator McKinnon, and could you just give us a brief description of what you found for the committee, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senator McKinnon had asked a question about the how expansive the program was used across the nation at this time, and I got in touch with a couple of different national organizations, NASIO, NCSL, and an Environmental and Energy Study Institute, to get the most updated information I could. As it was explained to me, it's a little bit complicated because not all states, depending on their utility regulations, needed specific statutory authorization. So some of them, the utilities already had the authority. Some states had to get explicit authority, and other states needed clarification. The state of Alaska falls into the area of needing clarification. But they're currently, and I think this information may be a year old, but there were at that time 80 on-bill programs being operated in 27 different states. Not all of them were linked to energy efficiency, but the mechanism was in use in 27 different states. And also, the email that I received back indicated that pointed to Illinois, Minnesota, and South Carolina as good examples of statutes to follow or programs to follow, and the legislation in front of you today is in fact patterned after South Carolina's legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Terrio. And every member should have the response to Senator McKinnon's question in their packets. So I'm going to remove my objection because I didn't do that last week. And we first heard, just a brief history, we first heard HB 374 on April 17th. We heard it again on April 25th. We worked over the course of 2 days with Department of Law, Representative Wool's office, to come up with the language that's in the CS for the consumer protection piece. Any questions from committee members? Seeing none, Senator Stedman, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go ahead and make a motion and we move the Senate CS for House Bill 374, version S, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Is that what your motion said?
Thank you. That'll work. Seeing no objections, the bill moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease. We're back on the record. One thing I did forget to omit for the public record, we did have the fiscal note reviewed again on HB 74. It did not change, and it is still a zero fiscal note. Next, we have up for us is House Bill 410, and this is by the House Regional Community and Regional Affairs. Mr. Paul LeBeau, aide to Representative Neil Foster, is here. Representative Foster is tied up on other state business. So, Mr. LeBeau, would you please come up and put yourself on the record, sir, and tell us what you're doing?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul LeBeau, staff to Representative Foster. House Bill 410 is a bill which I think many of you have probably seen before. It is a one-word amendment found on page 1, line 9, and it changes the date 2006 to 2020. This has to do with involuntary dissolution of Native corporations. When any corporation, including Native corporations, are involuntarily dissolved, they can reincorporate, but they can't reincorporate as the same entity. They become a different entity. For village corporations, that proves to be problematic as the assets and rights given to them under ANCSA are tied to that specific corporation organized under ANCSA in 1971, which requires this change in law so that for them to reincorporate and still maintain their status and assets.
Questions from committee members?
Thank you. Can you,
Senator Gardner?
Thank you. Can you tell us how often this has happened, and generally how long a corporation is dissolved before it has reformed historically?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe this bill has been done about five times. I myself have carried it twice previously. It can vary greatly. It depends largely on the reason for the dissolution. These are not major corporations like the 13 regional for-profits. These are very small non-professional organizations. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what you'll have happen is the president of that corporation moves out of town. There's no reorganization of that organization, and nobody's submitting the paperwork. And then it could be 2 years, 4 years, until people realize what's going on and what they need to do to fix it. In this case, it's the Village Native Corporation that's associated with Billmore Slough, and we were contacted by an attorney that they had reached out to try and work their way through this, and their attorney correctly realized that the only way to deal with this was through legislation.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If this has been done four or five times, why are you only reenacting it for such a short time frame?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, we were contacted by Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. They had a potential fix that would be permanent on the lines of what Senator Hoffman mentioned. And that would have been just to remove the date entirely. We felt a little uncomfortable since this was a bill coming to us at the end of session and rushing through the 24-hour rule to make a permanent change on such short notice. But it's something that Representative Edgman's office and I are going to be working through over the interim to come up with a permanent fix.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stebbin? Yeah, I'd just like to have a little bit of history. Is it two or three, you know, little corporations that we're dealing with historically that have had to come under the statute, or is there dozens of times it's been implemented? Because there's, from what I'm hearing you say, there's currently one entity today. But in the past, how many, and how many are out there now currently that are have been dissolved and may want to come back?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, in the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee, Commerce, Community, and Economic Development had testified that there are currently 19 organizations that would qualify under this. The one I mentioned was simply the one that had contacted us about their need to do that. And in terms of the number that have been historically reincorporated under legislation like this, I would have to reach out to Commerce Community and see if they have that information.
Thank you, Senator McKinney. You had a question?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the benefit of the Native corporations being called out in these changes? Is there a benefit as to status?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to try and get at this and let me know if I understood your question correctly. So in dealing with them specifically, it has to do with the rights and assets granted to them under ANCSA. So those go specifically to this one corporation, and it has to have continuity in order to maintain those rights and assets.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up?
Follow-up.
Mr. LeBeau, how does the administration determine that new folks who are applying on behalf of the corporation with their paperwork that they're part of the previous identified action?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe I have a lifeline from DCCED, either here or online.
Ms. Chambers, thank you for coming up and put yourself on the record. I had written you a letter, and I have that response in my box, and I thought I put it in my package to read into the record, but you're here, and you've heard Senator McKinnon's question, so could you help us out, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And with me at the table is Kathy Fagerstrom. She is our supervisor for the Corporations and Business Licensing section, and she is our technical expert on these matters. So we do have some information for you. There have been 19 of the different corporations that have formed under this section of statute, 19 involuntary dissolutions since 2011. Some of those are the same small corporation for the reasons that were mentioned earlier, being involuntarily dissolved over and over again. The process is established in statute. We do quite a bit of communication to all corporations of all kinds to let them know, but if no one's there to receive the message, then what's been described is what happens. So there are quite a few that would qualify, and many of those have been able to reinstate within that window, but the bill would allow that sort of temporary fix for the few who would fall within that window to be able to reinstate while the sponsor is working on a longer-term solution. Redoing this every couple of years would be a policy call on the legislature's part, and there's nothing that we can see that would prevent a different, further out decision to allow more time for these corporations to be able to reinstate. Other corporations that are not Native corporations are able to reinstate within 2 years. And
Excuse me, can I just interrupt for a second on what you just said? But that's under another section of law, correct?
Yes,
and this section 10 is for specifically for this issue.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, you're correct. The this section refers back to the other section that refers to corporations in general, and then it says, plus, there's this additional time period to allow them to reinstate. So they do get, if the bill were to pass, they would get a little bit longer time. Regarding Senator McKinnon's question about verification, I wonder if Senator McKinnon could restate the question and see if Ms. Fagerstrom would be able to answer regarding the level of scrutiny that we provide.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If corporations are having trouble keeping up with the paperwork, and as Mr. LeBeau suggested, or you suggested, that someone's not there to receive the mail and so someone's not getting notified, how do we know who is part of these village corporations or groups when we've lost contact with whoever moved out of the village or somewhere else? How do you know that we're getting back on track with the assets with the person that's actually part of the group or not?
Through the chair, this is Kathy Fagerstrom. The filings that they would submit would require, depending on what the issue was that caused involuntary dissolution, would require a specific signature, and it would be based on either who's on record or who's coming on record. So if the reason they were dissolved was for a lack of a biannual report, then the new biannual report would identify the new officer, and that would be the signature we'd be looking for on that document.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How do you know that the people that are applying to continue to receive the assets were part of the original settlement?
I can't speak on the assets or the settlement stuff.
Because that's my understanding of what we're trying to retain is the assets from the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And so those were given to specific groups of people to represent that group of people's interests. But we're not doing anything to verify that group of people is actually the one retaining the assets.
Through the chair, this is Sarah Chambers, and ANCSA is governed under a different section of statute. We're basically the filing entity for corporations, so we don't have a nexus other than to state which entities have decided to incorporate under state law. There's no nexus with ANCSA. So we don't have a fiduciary responsibility or the information available to determine, to make that determination. That would be another area of law.
Senator McKinnon, I think I might know where you're going. In this particular case, in this particular corporation, from what I've read, that's would be between BLM and that corporation. You see, because this has to do with the land transfer, right? And the federal government assigned the land under ANCSA. And Senator Hoffman, help me.
Well, as the president of a village corporation, these instances happen in very, very small communities that, like Oscarville, they may only have 100 shareholders or something like that. And then the administrator isn't as proficient in following the paperwork. And this happens with other corporations. They forget to recertify the certificates, the Alaskan entity certificates. I've had corporations and I forgot to do that as well. But these corporations have to have annual shareholder meetings, and in many cases they have a minimum of 7 people. So the day-to-day operations of the corporation and where those assets are held, I would say that it would be minimal that the assets would be disposed of or someone would be getting a hold of them without the proper procedures, because even in those small entities, many of the people that are on the boards are on there for 2 to 3 decades, and in many cases are the same players. So it could possibly happen, but I would say it's very highly, highly unlikely.
Follow-up, Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at lines 10 and 11, and it says its shareholders have all the rights. And so the question of the department is, do we know who the shareholders of the corporations that are filing paper with you, who they are?
Through the chair, this is Kathy Fagerstrom. Only if they report the names of the shareholders, and statutes require that they only report the shareholders that own 5% or more.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions from committee members? Let's see what we got here for public testimony. Mr. Manley, we're open for public testimony. We have nobody online for public testimony. Anybody in the room for public testimony? Senator Stedman, did we see anybody in the back there? Or, no, we're good. All right. Public testimony is closed. Fiscal note is a zero fiscal note. Brief at ease. I'd entertain a motion to move this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go ahead and make a motion that we move House Bill number 410, version D, from committee with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal note to the next committee referral.
Seeing no objection, HB 140 moves from committee. The meeting is adjourned at 3:55. Thanks to all my committee members and staff. Thank you for coming today. Yeah, right there.